You can go ahead and turn to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2 as we begin or continue our series through the book of Daniel. In 1991, a judge fined two brothers, Gino and Russell, $900,000 for dumping illegally or for operating an illegal dump. The brothers owned a wrecking company in Connecticut. And the problem started in 1986 when the brothers began dumping debris in a nearby vacant lot. Eventually, this mound of rubble covered 2 acres and was 35 feet high, which is the size of a three-story building. And the state then got involved and told them they needed to clean it up. Unfortunately, though, for the brothers, they had no place to put the junk. You can only put so much under your beds, as my kids have learned. And they found that it was just too expensive to haul away all that debris. And so one year they spent $330,000 to haul away the debris that they had, but it barely put a dent in the pile. And so according to the brother Gino, he said it was never supposed to get this high. It was never supposed to get this high. Now, have you ever felt like life can sometimes be like that pile of junk, where it seems totally out of your control, impossible to manage no matter what you do? And no doubt, we probably all felt this at some point during the pandemic that happened, things were just out of our control. I remember when the news of the virus hit in March of 2020, at least started getting big in here. And on March 15th, the week leading up to the March 15th service, there were tons of churches canceling. And so I saw this as an opportunity for Island Pond. So I decided that we would go ahead and have service that week. And so we held service. Here's proof of it right here. And it turned out I was wrong. That week, attendance was about half the usual amount. And I came to the realization that day that no matter what I wanted to do, things were out of my control. And so that was the next week is when we moved outside and enjoyed the outside for a number of months. Now, again, we're in a series through the book of Daniel, focusing mainly on chapters 1 through 6. And as we're going to see, life continues to be out of control for Daniel. Last week we saw how Daniel and his friends were basically ripped out of their homeland and turned into servants for the Babylonian king. They were royalty in Judah, now turned into servants in a foreign land for the king. And this happened when they were young teenagers. And the Babylonians tried to turn them into Babylonians. But instead, we saw that they held close to God and continued to follow him without compromising. And one would think after getting through chapter 1 that God would protect them after everything that they had been through. I mean, they had been through a lot and they had faithfully held on to God. So surely they were like, all right, we made it through the worst. God's going to be with me now. And in reality, God was with them. But from the outside, as we're going to see, it's not going to seem that way. And so the same is going to be true in this chapter. And Daniel and his friends are going to continue to follow God. But even as they do this, things are going to get even crazier for them. So no doubt, things for them were out of control, at least from a human perspective. So we're going to go through this chapter, and as we do, I want you to just think about your own life. Because many of you right now are thinking that life is out of control. And maybe you realize that, all right, I'm doing good right now, but if you've been around more than a few years in life, you know that soon it will feel out of control. So whether you're going through it now or it's coming, you know bad times will happen at some point. And when that happens, what do you do? What do you do? And we're going to see what Daniel did. And I want to say hopefully we'll learn from Daniel and hopefully learn some of the actions that he had. But even more, hopefully get some of the beliefs that he had as well. So here's what I hope we're going to see. That even when life seems out of control, listen, God is still in control. But before I go through the entire passage, I'm going to start out in verse 1, taking a little tangent, as I might say. Because I think this little tangent that we're going to take is going to address some questions that many of us all have at times and that many of us may struggle with. So let me read starting in verse 1. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Now let's stop there. We've made it a lot pretty far, haven't we, here? When I read this verse this week, I had to pause because Daniel 1 that we read last week talked about Daniel and his friends being there for 3 years already. So they had served the king for 3 years. And if that's the case, now it says in chapter 2 that it was the second year. So what's going on here? Is there a contradiction here that we've just discovered in the Bible? And if so, should we just stop reading Daniel? Because if this is a contradiction, then this whole book must not be true. I bring this up because I want you to know that we should not be afraid of verses in the Bible that seem to contradict. And in all the cases, listen, every single one of the cases that you will find in the Bible that seem to contradict each other, if you dig in enough, you will find an answer, or at the very least, you will find a number of possibilities. So I'm going to use this verse as sort of like a guinea pig for us, as an example of what other verses seem, when other verses seem to contradict. So after reading several commentaries and a number of articles on the internet, I found that there were multiple explanations as to why in chapter 2 it says a second year, and yet in chapter 1 it talks about 3 years. And so in chapter 1, I'm going to give you three possibilities here. The first option is that chapter 2 is during Daniel's training. So it's possible in this story that it just went back in time. And considering Daniel, as we're going to read further on, Daniel's not mentioned in the first part of the verses, it's entirely possible that Daniel was still in the training mode and the king was working with the wise men while Daniel was not there yet. So first option is perfectly reasonable here, that this just took a story and went back after sort of the broad part was mentioned in chapter 1. Second option is that it is a scribal error. So some of the early copies of the Greek translation of the Old Testament, so these are copies of copies of copies now, in the Old Testament it says that that it's the 12th year. So it's the 12th year. So it's possible that some tired scribe was out there, middle of the night, maybe his kids had kept him up long time. Maybe he had stayed up watching a Netflix movie too late, and then he had to get his work done. And so he was writing there in the middle of the night at candlelight, and he accidentally wrote the number 2 instead of 12, and that sort of continued on. But most likely it's the opposite, where that 12 was an error and the 2 is the correct one. But that's another option. Third option is that King Nebuchadnezzar's official reign did not start until later on. And so let me show you from one commentary this graph here. So we have here on this side here, that Daniel's side of things happened, and then the other side is Nebuchadnezzar. So the first year of Daniel could have been the year of ascension, like the year that King Nebuchadnezzar is rising up as the king. And then the next year, which would be the second year of Daniel, the first year of King Nebuchadnezzar was his first official year, and then so on. So the third year of Daniel would be King Nebuchadnezzar's second year. So all that to say, technology here, here we go, that right when Daniel graduated from his time in the Babylonian school was when Nebuchadnezzar was in his second year, which would then perfectly work with what it's saying there. And so, again, I'm spending this time here to help you see that you don't have to reject the Bible just because you come across something that seems to contradict. So if it seems to contradict, dig in. Dig in, and you will find an answer. The Bible's been around a long time now. And there's been plenty of people that are out there that have tried to discredit it. But the more that you will dig in, the more, I'm confident to say, the more that you will find that it is reliable and is true. All right, let's go ahead now and turn around off of our tangent here. Let's get back to the passage. So verse 1 again. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. So according to non-biblical sources out there, Nebuchadnezzar was a very religious person. And he diligently prayed to Babylonian gods often. And so when he encountered a dream like this, it wasn't like he just, like we may wake up and said, that was a weird dream. On with my day, right? No, he saw this as a way that one of the gods was trying to talk to him. And so he was very troubled about this. Verse 2. And then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. And so they came in and stood before him. And the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. And then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream. And we will show you the interpretation. Let's stop there. So the king had these wise men on his staff, ready for his beck and call. And he had people specifically for the dream problem. He had people on his staff to interpret his dreams. And so when he woke up that morning, or in the middle of the night, and he said he had this difficult dream, what did he do? He called in the dream interpreters. So he called in the magicians. He called in the enchanters. He called in the sorcerers. And he called in the Chaldeans. And this had likely happened before. And the magicians and sorcerers and all of them had likely given an interpretation. However, the king had likely caught on to the fact that his interpreters were probably not very good at interpreting. And since this dream seemed really important to him, here's what he did in the next verse. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, notice, not just the interpretation, but the dream also, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid ruin. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. What do you think the magicians were thinking right at that moment? Now I've got to hand it to the king. That was a smart move. Harsh, but smart, right? He wants them to first tell the dream before they interpret it. And if they're wrong, the king rather descriptively says that he's going to cut them into pieces and destroy their houses. That literal interpretation is that he would turn their houses into a pile of dung. So no pressure, right? No pressure. Verse 7, they answered a second time and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation. So it's possible here that at this point in the story, it doesn't say it, but it's possible that they left for a while and were trying to sort of bide time, to stall so that something else would happen. Maybe they're waiting for the king to forget, to change his mind. Maybe someone else would pop in there and give the interpretation. Or maybe they were even waiting for the king to be overthrown. I don't know. But whatever it is, the king wasn't having it. Verse 8, the king answered and said, I know with certainty that you all are trying to gain time because you see that the word from me is firm. Verse 9, if you do not make known to me the dream, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. Would we all agree here that the king's in a bad mood? He wants an answer now. Now pay attention to what the Chaldeans answer to the king. Because even though they follow different gods, there's some truth in what they're about to say. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demands. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with the flesh. So they may not be able to interpret the dream here, but they're very close to the truth here. They say, no one except for the gods. And as we saw last week, as we're going to see today, and as we're going to see in the weeks to come, this is one of the major themes of Daniel. That no matter who is king, that no matter what the difficulties are, God is still the one in control. And the wise men and the magicians recognize, even though, listen, they are claiming to have these different powers. They're magicians, they're sorcerers, they're all these things. And yet they recognize that there is someone else other than them that is greater than them. And as we're going to see in a moment, this is why Daniel is not afraid. Because God is in control. Now going back to our passage for a moment here. The king does not approve of their answer. And so, verse 12, because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all his wise men of Babylon be destroyed. Now, if you remember, up to this point, there's been no mention of Daniel, and that's because most likely Daniel wasn't there. But that's about to change. Because for whatever reason, even though the king saw that Daniel and his friends were smarter than all the other wise men, says in chapter 1, even though he wasn't among them, Daniel's head has just been requested for a platter. He's still grouped in as a wise man. So when he gets angry at these wise men, he wants all of them eliminated. Verse 13. And so the decree went out, and the wise men were about is the key here, about to be killed. And they sought Daniel and his companions to say hi to him. No, unfortunately, it's to kill them. To kill them. Daniel's probably thinking initially, what did I do? Now, can you imagine what is going through the mind of Daniel at this point? This is the moment in his life where if things weren't bad enough, they've just gone from bad to worse. Life is out of control for Daniel right now, even more than before. So let's go ahead and see what Daniel does in the next verse here. So then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch. Arioch's the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. What a job, right? He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. And then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to his three friends that came with him, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And we know them better by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So when life seems at its worst, and everyone was likely panicking, Daniel does not. Let me point out five things that Daniel does, and I think this is going to be helpful for all of us. First of all, Daniel approaches the situation thoughtfully. Thoughtfully. So he doesn't start panicking. He goes and he gets all the details. Now, would any of you be guilty? I'm not asking you to raise your hand, but I'm just saying, maybe me. Would any of you be guilty of panicking before you get all the information? But Daniel does not. He wants to get the information before it's panic time. Second, he does what he's able to. So he doesn't give up. He doesn't just sit back and just pessimistically wait. No, he starts to act. Now, probably none of you were like this in college, but I was a procrastinator in college. Let me just rephrase it. I'm a procrastinator and was so in college. And in college, I would wait and wait and wait before I started studying for a test. I would wait and wait and wait before I started writing a paper. And occasionally, it would work out most of the time, but occasionally I would get to the night before it was due or the night before the test, and I would start working on it, and I'd work on an hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, and then I'd suddenly realize, I'm done. There's no way I'm going to do this. And so what do? I don't press on. I go to bed and go to sleep. I give up. And maybe that's why I didn't go to Harvard. But that's what I did. Daniel, on the other hand, does not do that. Third thing he does is that he goes and he tells his friends. And so he goes and he lets them know what's going on. And not only do they provide support to him, but they're also going to help him out in the next part. But let me just say, church, this is why every one of us in church that calls Island Pond our home should be involved in some sort of group here in Island Pond. Because here on Sunday is great, but you're not going to make best friends, you're not going to make good friends just by sitting here and listening to me preach. And you should be here. Now, I'm not saying skip this. But listen, you should be also. You need to be building friendships among other Christians so that when times do go bad, they can support you and they can pray for you as well, which is what we see in the next part. So he and his friends pray. He prays. So once he gets all of the details here, he talks to his friends and he asks them, guys, tonight is bad. I mean, really bad. And so let's pray together that God will intervene. And so at this point, he's done what he can. He didn't put it all in his own power, but he did his part. And then he turns it over to God. And this is shown by the next thing that he does. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. And then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Now, it doesn't say it specifically there, but it's saying that he went to sleep. He went to sleep while his life was on the line. So he leaves it up to God. He's done what he can. He's saying, God, here you go. Here you go, God. Now I'm asking you to get involved in this situation. I'm asking you to intervene. Notice in the verse, it didn't say, and Daniel worked hard and figured out the mystery. It was that God gave him the mystery. And I said last week that the point of the book of Daniel is not to put Daniel on a pedestal. So this book is not about be more like Daniel. This book is about the faithfulness and sovereignty. Sovereignty is just a fancy word of God being in control. The sovereignty of God. But having said that, to not put Daniel on a pedestal, let me contradict myself a little bit. And I want to encourage you to follow Daniel's example here and what he's done. So when life gets out of control, don't panic. Don't get angry at God. Don't start doing things in your own power. Daniel, he slowed down. He got the information. He did what he could. And then he prayed and he waited. He prayed and he waited for God to do what he could. But I also need to point out this. That Daniel here is not some amazing guy. Daniel is responding this way because, Daniel is not responding this way because he's an amazing guy. He's responding this way because he's following an amazing God. Sometimes I listen to the sports radio, and they talk about if the coaches are good or if it's just the quarterback that makes them good. My team, the Commanders, haven't had a good quarterback in quite some time. And guess how our coaches have done? Not very well. And so it's not here Daniel. It's God that makes Daniel look good here. So I want to encourage you. Don't focus completely on Daniel. Focus on God. Daniel didn't have to panic. Because he knew that God was in control. And Daniel prayed because he knew that the situation was beyond him, but it was not beyond God. And Daniel could sleep peacefully in light of knowing that he was about to be killed because he knew that God would take care of it. Now let's commend Daniel for addressing the situation in a godly way, but make no mistake that God is the hero of this story, not Daniel. And while we would do well to follow his example, we would do even better to follow hard after God. So we're going to go ahead and pause in the story now. We'll pick it up next week. If you really want to know what happens, just read the rest of Daniel 2 after the service. And I want to ask, what can we learn from a story like this? We've already talked about how what Daniel did when things were out of control. So we've looked at that perspective, but now I want to focus on two other things that we can take away from this story. So here's the first thing. Choose your God carefully. Because if you look at this story really exemplifies two different gods, one plural gods and one God. So on the one side, there's the Babylonian gods and the king and the wise men that followed. On the other side is Yahweh, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And we see here that how followers of both sides, how they react when things are out of control. So what are the Babylonian gods? They were not accessible. The magicians really wanted some answers here, and they couldn't get them. Yahweh, on the other hand, helped Daniel out and controlled the situation. But we also see the followers of the Babylonian gods, they were living in fear. They were living in uncertainty. Even the king was living in fear and uncertainty. The king was afraid. The wise men were afraid. Daniel, on the other hand, he was living with confidence. With confidence. And he wasn't living in confidence that God would just make everything perfect for him, but that God was in control of everything. Daniel was able to sleep with the prospect of death nearby because he knew that God was in control. But let's think about this. Which of the gods or gods were most popular in Babylon? Which ones had the most prestige? Which one did the king follow? It wasn't Daniel's God. And so I want to encourage us. We don't choose who we follow based on what or who is most popular. We don't choose or follow based on what everyone else around us does or what we see on TV as the dominant belief system. We choose based on the one that is right and really the one that is most powerful. And so, church, each of you need to remember to choose your God carefully. Because when things get out of control, you better be following the right God. And some of us are Christians here and you're saying, I follow God. But do your actions show that you're following God? So it's possible, perfect, very possible here, that you could be a Christian but have started looking at idols as your God. To start look at other things that you're going to look to for pleasure, for support, to take away that fear or depression that you struggle with. And I want to encourage you again, choose your God carefully. Second thing, use the gifts that God has given you no matter the time. So another reason that Daniel had confidence in this situation, and this goes along with God being in control, is because God had gifted him in the area where there was the problem. And so looking back at chapter 1, in verse 17, it says that God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. But in specifically, Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So years prior, God had gifted Daniel with the ability to understand dreams. And so when Daniel heard that the king was upset because no one could interpret dreams, he jumped into action. He knew that this was something through God that he could do. Now, none of us, at least you haven't told me, are able to interpret dreams. But listen, each of you has gifts that God has given you. And so I want to encourage you to use them. To use them in the good times, but even use them in the bad times. Because Daniel here was not in his ideal situation, but he still used his gifts. And some of you are waiting for like that right moment before you start using your gifts. Maybe you're waiting to retire, or maybe you're waiting for the right stage of life. Maybe you're waiting for the right job or for the finances to be at a certain place or until you're healthier. And I want to encourage you, use them now. Use them now. If God has blessed you with something, use it. Use it. Now, I've shared this before, but I graduated from seminary in 2008, which was just a couple months before the real estate bust back then, when the economy just really went downhill and churches were laying off people. They were not hiring. And so no one wanted to hire young, inexperienced Kyle. And so it was safe to say, and this is how I felt, that my job situation was out of control. I had a baby on the way, and I could not find a job in church. No one wanted me. And so what did I do? At first, I felt sorry for myself. Then I complained to my wife a lot. And then I even questioned God. God, what are you doing here? You got me through seminary. Years of school to this point, only to find nothing in return. But eventually, I sort of dramatically told myself, if the church doesn't want me right now, then I'm going to go to someone who does. And since I had before going into seminary, I'd been a social worker, I had experience working with nursing homes, and so I knew that nursing homes needed people to bring the gospel to them, to share about Jesus in there. And so I contacted one of the nursing homes, and I began volunteering there every Sunday there. I would go. And I would be like one of those Methodist itinerant preachers going from wing to wing, sharing God, with like doing a little church service to them. At one point, I was leading four different services in the building or on the property. Now, to be honest, I have no idea if I made any impact in their lives. Many of them had dementia. Many of them weren't listening to me. They were actually talking back at me. But what I do know is that I used my gifts in a place where people were dying without Jesus. literally dying without Jesus. And I do know that I was preaching there for those 3 years. I learned, or for those 2 years, as I did that, I learned a lot about preaching. And I do know that no matter what the results were, I was glorifying God with the gifts that I believed he gave me. Even, church, listen, even when life was not making sense. Not when everything was going well, but when life made no sense. And so whatever God has blessed you with, I want to encourage you, use it for his glory. And you may say, but it's not going to make any difference. I didn't say make a difference. I said use it for his glory. I'm going to close with one last thought, because a moment ago then, you know, I'm talking about these gifts and using them in bad times. And you may be thinking, Kyle, I have no gifts to use. I have no talents. I don't have any money to share. I don't have this or this or this. And if that's you, or if that's how you feel, I want to propose to you that even if you think you have nothing to offer, if you are in Christ, then you have something to offer. You have a gift to share. Because that gift that was given to you by Jesus Christ is now able to then be taken and shared with others. So no matter how talented you are, no matter how good you are at stuff, listen, if you are in Christ, you have a gift to share. Let me close with this story here. It's not an impactful story here, but I think it illustrates what we're talking about. In January of 2021, there's this woman named Tessica Brown. She's around 40 years old, and she was having problems with her hair. And so she normally used this hair product called Got to Be Glued. Here's a picture of it. But she accidentally used something with a similar name called Gorilla Glue Adhesive Spray. I guess some of you know what's going to happen here. And let me tell you, the glue worked. But it worked a little too well. And poor Tessica's hair was locked into place with glue that would not go away. So she tried everything she could. She went to the hospital to try to get the glue off. They could not do that. And so one of her friends, feeling sorry for her, started one of those GoFundMe pages to raise money for her for the medical expenses, because she had glued her hair. And she felt tormented. She said it was like everything was held in place. So every day that her hair grew, it was like just little pins and needles there in her hair. This whole story, thanks to her, because she went onto social media about it, it went viral. And out of the blue, there's this renowned plastic surgeon from Beverly Hills, and he called her and he offered to get the glue out. And it turns out that this doctor, who's Dr. Michael Obang, I think is his last name, he had a background in chemistry. So not only was he a plastic surgeon, he had a background in chemistry. So when he heard this story about the problem with the glue, he was certain that he could get the glue out with the right dissolvent. So even more, he offered to do it for free. And so that's exactly what happened. She went there and he found this special made, that he made this dissolvent, and he got it off her hair. Now, in a very small way, this story illustrates the idea of using your gifts. Tessica had a problem, wouldn't you all agree? But Dr. Obang had skills, not only as a doctor, but in specific in chemistry, that he knew he could use then to help her. So he used his gifts to help. After this happened, Tessica was very grateful to her, or to him, to have her hair back. And so, as I mentioned before, there was this GoFundMe account started, and they were aiming for $1,500. It turns out they raised $23,000. So if you ever want to raise money, Gorilla Glue your hair, get on Instagram or TikTok or something, and there you go. Tessica ended up donating a lot of that money to Dr. Obang's charity, and then to various other charities. And so she used the gifts that she had been given to help others out. And so as we close, I want to ask you a couple of questions just to think about. They're on the teaching sheets as well, and so as you go out of here in just a little bit, you can just reflect on these during the week. The first is this: what has God gifted you with? What has he gifted you with that you can use to be a blessing to others, even in the bad times? So not just when life is going perfectly, but when things are going poorly as well. Second, what can you implement in your life after seeing what Daniel did when things were out of control? So how can you utilize some of the things he did in your own life? And then third, I want to ask everyone, do you follow the right God? Do you follow the right God? And so as we go into a time of prayer, I want to ask you to think about what you need to give back to God. And I want you to think about how you can be a blessing to others. But I also want you to think about, are you following the right God? And if you're not, Jesus makes it very easy for you. It was a tough road for him by dying on the cross. But he has now made it so that if you simply follow after him, you make the choice, the conscious choice to say, God, I'm following after you. The Bible says that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. Now, is that change very hard? Like that instant? No. No, you can do that. Following Jesus isn't easy. But changing your direction, following the right God, it's just a matter of putting your trust and your faith in him. So if there's anyone here who's never done that, today is the best day to do it because it's now. The moment you leave out of here, you don't know how much life you have left. You don't know what's going to happen after this. So do it now and give him your life. Any day, life could change and things could go out of control for us. And so I want to encourage us, let's be ready as a church. Families, let's be ready and know what we're going to do following after God. Every one of us, let's be ready and let's focus on God. Let's go ahead and pray.